Come here. It's a wonderful place to be at. So I normally work in black holes and string theory and things like the information paradox and so on. But from whatever we had learned about black holes, it turns out that there is something interesting one might be able to say about the early universe, and that's what I'll try to tell you about today. This thing has sort of become unstable and is moving by itself. Okay, so this is work I did a few years ago in collaboration with my student Borun Chaudhary. That was followed up by some other papers by Kalyan Rama. But something I want to get back to now, because now I think we understand everything about black holes from string theory, and whatever lessons come in there, we want to apply it to the early universe. Okay, so why should the black holes have anything to do with the early universe? If I can't do this, then I'll just take the plug out from there. So if you take the universe and you follow it back to early times, like this you can take as a cartoon of an expanding universe. So let's say this is late time, this is early times. Then it looks like the density might want to go to infinity. At least if you go toward the Big Bang, the density rises. So today if you see radiation, there might be something else before that, something else before that. We are going towards an area of, let's say, infinite density. So then string theory, if it's a complete theory of quantum gravity like it tries to be, it should give you a well-defined answer to the following question. What is the equation of state in the limit of infinite density? So we want to set up that problem in string theory, and then we'll suggest a concrete answer. Okay. And the answer will be that equation of state in the limit of infinite density is given by something called the fractional brain gas. Okay, this is not the same as what people call normally call the brain gas. At the end, I'll come and tell you it's a very different thing from the kind of brain gas that you might have seen Brandon Berger or Brian Greene work on. And the story basically goes like this. If you take the time when you had radiation in the universe, the entropy goes like energy to the 3/4. That's for radiation. Okay? If you go a little bit further back in the past and you thought there were strings floating around, you get the so-called Hagedorn density of strings. It's the kind of Brandenburger-Waffa phase. In that Hagedorn density of strings, you get entropy going like E. You see it's a bigger power than this 3/4. But turns out in string theory, you can actually find equation of state, this fractional brain gas, where the entropy goes like E to the 9/2. So if you're looking at states of very high entropy, and if you think for some reason states of high entropy are the one that you should look at, then you really look deep into string theory and see how on earth you can get all the way down to E to the 9/2, and maybe that's the kind of state you should actually think about if string theory is the right theory of gravity. So that's what I want to show you in this talk. So the kind of question we'll ask ourselves is the following. We'll just take a universe to be a box of volume V, just for convenience, and so I just took it to be a torus, and this torus is expanding in the expanding cosmology. So I just taken a toroidal geometry for convenience. It shouldn't matter in the end. Anyway, so in the box, I put some energy E. Okay? And then the question I ask is, what is the state of maximal entropy you can get? What is entropy as a function of E and V? So is the question clear? Let this room be the box. And in this box, I put some energy E. Now you have string theory. For energy E, you can compute for this volume V of this room how much entropy you get S as a function of E and V. Then you put more energy and more energy. And the limit of energy E going to infinity, what does string theory tell you is S of E, comma V. So whenever you take something to infinity, like if E goes to infinity, things should simplify, and maybe a simple answer should come out. And we just want to know, what does string theory say for this function? So even if you don't actually accept our answer, which we postulate at the end of the talk, you can still ask yourself this question. So I think the question is maybe even more important than the answer. What is this answer in string theory in the limit of E going to infinity? The question is quite well defined, because if you take general relativity, you can take a box of some volume V, but you can put as much E as you want in it. There's no limit to how much E you can put. If you put more E, then the Hubble equation will tell you, you get a bigger rate of expansion, sort of blows up more rapidly. But it's not like there's a limit to how much E you can put. So you can ask for the limit of E going to infinity. Of course, if you put E a large amount of E, then dV by dt, the rate of expansion will become big. That's the Hubble law, right? So A dot over A square will be equal to the energy in it.
What asymptotics are we talking about here?
What asymptotics? So just a box with energy E going to
Because just to make meaning of the obvious. signal, right? I mean, if I have, you know, asymptotically flat or other fixed asymptotics, then I know what you're talking about in terms of energy. For general cosmology, I don't know what you're talking about.
So it's just I've taken the universe to be toroidal just for my own convenience. So it's just a torus. The whole universe is just a torus, let's say, a T3. And now in that T3, so if the radiation field is just a hot gas in a torus T3.
So you're not talking about total energy. It's all like integrated energy density is what you're talking
about. Yeah, yeah. You would be the total energy in the box. Okay, yeah. I'm not adding energy of gravity.
Yeah,
it's just a box. That's right.
Okay.
It's gravity at this point, yeah. So if you just do a Big Bang cosmology with the universe to be a T3 spatial section, and just expand that, right? So the
what if the structure radius of this energy become bigger than the box?
So there's no structure radius. It's just the Robertson-Walker cosmology. So it's not like it's an asymptotically flat solution, right? Take a Robertson-Walker cosmology. Instead of R3, I just made a T3. That you can always do. You get the same solution, because translationally invariant. So take the flat section K equal to 0 Robertson-Walker cosmology. Take a radiation dominated for the moment, so just fill it with radiation. Then whatever rho you get at any given volume, take the rho and multiply by the volume of the torus at any given time. That's the energy E at that time, which I'm calling E. So you can put any amount of E that you want, and as you go towards the path, the density does go to infinity. Yeah.
Okay. When you say take the flat section, you're really constructing a flat universe.
That's right. I took K equal to 0. It doesn't have to be. I just took K equal to 0. Right. That's right.
So normally I think of a flat universe as a low entropy state when I'm thinking about gravity.
Okay.
And so you're imposing that. So you're asking about entropy, but you're ignoring gravity.
So you're saying where are all the...
Black holes. Why isn't there a big...
That's what I'm going to come and tell you about. The black holes is all connected to black holes in the end, right? So in the end, I'll tell you, why shouldn't we take the universe to be full of black holes? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Well, or even why should it be FRW if there's really a lot of...
Good. Let's come back and ask those questions at the end, because I'm just going to tell you something very simple about what kind of states you can find in the theory and what we should do with them in the cosmology. Let's come back and debate that at the end. So you should exactly ask that question, let's say, towards the end of this talk. So right now, we are just saying that if you take the analog of the Friedman-Robertson-Walker universe, take the flat spatial section just for convenience, because we just want to make some point about string theory in there, and then we just say the energy E is just rho times the volume, and if you put more and more E, is that the state of most entropy? Or are the states of bigger entropy that we should think about? What should you do? So again, here our question, what does string theory give for S of E, V? And let's just draw it in picture. So historically, we've normally thought that if you take a normal cosmology, in any given spatial section, you try to look for the states which have more entropy. Like, for example, at early times, because it can get more entropy from radiation, you assume it's radiation dominated, and you get the entropy going like e to the power, number of space dimensions. This is how you get a 3/4 if you put d equals 4 for a space-time dimension. But in general, for any dimension, you get e to some power which is less than 1. Radiation always has a power less than 1. And as the universe expands and cools down, you can actually get the atoms want to recombine and so on. In fact, then later on you get to dust, and which locally has less entropy. So, but you go back to the far past, you put radiation rather than dust because radiation had more entropy. So if you're going to follow this principle that you're looking for states of higher entropy, you should go and ask if in string theory there are states which are which can give you more entropy than radiation. Can you get a S going to S as some other powers? And if there are, then maybe those states should be considered as you go closer and closer to the Big Bang. So if you learn about strings, and if you're not,
That's not how I think about the Big Bang. It's approximately adiabatic. Maybe entropy goes up a little bit when black holes form. And it's very low entropy, in the sense there aren't black holes.
Because black holes have more entropy. So what you're saying is black holes have more entropy, hot gas would have less entropy.
Because the early universe is low entropy.
Because a hot gas has lower entropy than black holes in the same volume. Yeah. That's exactly the question I'll come and answer for you at the end. So hold that question. Right. That's exactly the puzzle we want to answer. Why would you think of the universe as, you should take it to be black holes. The reason we don't take the early universe to be black holes is that if it was all in black holes, how would it ever come out of black holes maybe? How would it be what it is today? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, we would like to take it to be black holes.
Everyone does wonder how the Big Bang started. So.
Right. So exactly, so that's a very good question, right? If you are looking for, why don't we take dust to be in the early universe, has even lower entropy. Radiation seems to have more entropy than dust. You can take radiation as you get very hot. But black holes would seem to have even more entropy than radiation. Why don't we take the early universe to be full of black holes? And the problem is, if we did, the black holes can only merge. They don't seem to unmerge themselves. So how do we see what we see around today? That's exactly the kind of question I want to answer at the end. Good, so what that question?
That's exactly the higher entropy if you're in a cosmological constant, which is big empty to sitter with a cosmological constant that has huge entropy.
But in string theory, we don't know how to make things like these expanding universes if we take delicate constructions of brains and antibrains like KK and T. But it's a little hard to get them. We have to sort of arrange how to get them. And again, that's something I want to talk about at the end. So okay, if you have a string gas, if you go closer towards the Big Bang and take a string gas, like Brandenburg and Waffle kind of thing, then the entropy goes like E. So that's a little better than e to the 3/4 that we talked about. With radiation, you always get e to some power which is less than 1. But now you can get S going like E, which has higher entropy than that. So let's ask, are there states? So if you think about a radiation-dominated phase, if you go down where the temperature becomes Hagedorn temperature, you should ask, are these guys going to dominate? So then the question is, can we get even higher powers of E from string theory? Now, we know that if you look at black holes, then the entropy of a black hole is given by A upon 4, which in 3 plus 1 dimensions goes like E square. And the point is that we do know how to get the entropy of black holes from using all these brains and strings in string theory. So it's true. If we have to just look at the configurations in string theory, which get us the entropy going like E square, okay? So that means there are some ways of putting these strings and, now these were only strings, but strings and brains together, which gives you an entropy which goes like E squared. So if you go far back enough to the past when the radiation phase was even hotter and hotter radiation, at some point this has more entropy than the radiation. At some point, whatever phase of brains that gives rise to this, well, they have even more entropy. And now we're actually getting good to just look at configurations of brains that have these kinds of entropy. And in the end, we'll come back exactly to the question, how do we connect all this to black hole? We're going to sort of go back to a phase. We're going to get a law of entropy, which has even more entropy than black holes. But it'll come out of black holes. That's what we have to see here. So what we really have to learn is, how do we get entropy of black holes in string theory? Okay, that's where all the entropy is in string theory. And we want to know, what do we do with D-brains to get this kind of entropy? Because it's a very funny answer if you think about it. If you have S going like E square, if S goes like any power of E which is bigger than 1, it's a little funny because the specific heat is negative. You can never make a canonical ensemble out of it. Even the Hagedorn phase, which is S going like E, you know, here the temperature is fixed. It doesn't change with energy. It's a borderline case where you can make an ensemble. And if you have S going like E to some power bigger than 1, specific heat is negative, there's no canonical ensemble. But that's where the states of maximal entropy are. You get these very long-lived metastable states, which is what black holes are. They decay slowly by Hawking radiation, but otherwise, that's where the entropy is. What is all the structure which can give you S going like E square? You can't do this in normal physics. If I just give you ordinary things in the lab, you do whatever you want with them, you'd always get S going like some power of E less than 1. But once you have extended objects in the theory, there are ways to put them together, which is exactly what you get in string theory, because it exactly reproduces the entropy of black holes with these brains. You get S going like E to the powers bigger than 1. And that's where the guts of string theory are if you're going to make very high energy states, high density states of string theory, high energy density states. And so if you want to understand this phase space of string theory, what you have to understand is the study of entropy in string theory. So that's what I want to tell you a little bit about. So this was done in the mid-90s or maybe even starting in the early 90s. I just want to spend a few slides reviewing that for you because not everybody may be familiar with that story. So, of course, Bekenstein showed way back in 1972 by using Gedanken experiment that the black hole must have an entropy given by the area of the horizon. I've put G Newton and C and H bar all to 1 in this talk. So what string theory has done is this particular funny entropy. In normal gravity, we couldn't really see where this entropy comes from. Black holes seem to have no hair. If a black hole has a unique state, you'd get an entropy log 1 equal to 0. But in string theory, we can actually count the states and get this entropy out. So we want to review how this entropy is found, then we want to extend the underlying ideas of that count to the universe. So how do you understand entropy of black holes in string theory? All the calculations run in the following way. Suppose you want to understand a black hole in 3 plus 1 dimensions. all of string theory lives in 10 dimensions, so there will be 6 compact dimensions. Let this be one of the compact dimensions. And if we ignore that dimension, look only at the non-compact ones, I have drawn that over here. So this is the non-compact directions, these are my compact ones. All the black holes are made in the following way. You take the object which you have in string theory, you cannot take anything from outside string theory, it's a complete theory, allows nothing from outside. Suppose you take a string, you can wrap it along the compact direction. To somebody who does not resolve the compact direction, it looks like a point mass which you have kept at that position, and then it's a mass which also carries what's called winding charge. Now what did I do there? Okay. It's something which carries winding charge and has a mass, it looks like a mass point. If you put lots of those strings together, then you should you can try to make a black hole with that much mass. Or you can just take a graviton, which is also a particle in string theory, and make it run around that circle. If you don't resolve that circle to somebody who only sees the dimensionally reduced theory in 3 plus 1, it looks like a point mass. Now it's carrying momentum charge in the compact direction, just dimensional reduction. So all you can do to make black holes in string theory is use all the objects you have available to you in the string theory, strings, gravitons, the other higher brains. You wrap them in compact directions. They become point-like objects in the non-compact directions, and they are supposed to give you the black holes. So is this okay with everybody? Because we'll just be using this kind of picture for the next few slides. So then you try to make black holes. First you make what's called one-charge objects. One charge means you take only one kind of object in the theory, let's say the strings. Okay. So string theory has a set of these dualities, S duality, T duality, which you don't need to know anything about for this talk. But what they can do is they can map any one kind of charge to any other kind of charge. You can take the graviton and you can move it to a string. You can take the string, you can map it to the brain. So if I'm looking at one charge object, if I look at any one of them, I get the same answer if I look at any other. So let's take any one of them. Let me take the strings wrapped in a circle. Now I'm not looking at lots of different strings. I want to make one black hole of large mass. So I make a bound state of these strings. But a bound state of many strings actually has a very simple pictorial interpretation in string theory. It's just what is called a multi-wound string. So what's a multi-wound string? It's a string that goes around a circle once, twice, three times, and joins back to itself. Okay, so just a multi-wound string, that's all. It's very simple. But the multi-wound string actually has a unique configuration. Okay, just the elastic band settles down to the lowest energy configuration. The entropy actually is zero. So if you take any number of particles which are all of the same kind, you take lots of strings and you bind them together, doesn't matter how many of them you take, the mass keeps going up, but the entropy doesn't go up. So you don't actually get any entropy if you take large amounts of the same charge. The first time you get something interesting is if we take two different kinds of objects in the theory. We take the strings and we take the gravitons running around the circle. As I said, by using S and T dualities, you can map it to any other kinds of brains. I'll just map it to other brains for you. So these carry winding charge, these carry momentum charge. If you bind them together, you'll get a multi-bound string like we said. And all this momentum also has to be bound to the string. What happens if you bind momentum to a string? Well, that is also pictorially very simple. All you get is, if I open up the string to its covering space, the total length is now the winding number n1 times I wind the string, np units of momentum I have put on it. The total length of the string when you open it up is n1 times the compact circle L. But when you bind momentum onto a string, all you get is traveling waves on the string. So binding in string theory is also very simple. It's very pictorial. You can bind strings together, it makes a multi-wound string. You can bind momentum to the string, it just makes traveling waves. But now you see there are many ways to put the same amount of momentum and same number of strings together, because same momentum on a string can be carried in traveling waves in many different ways, because you can partition the momentum among different harmonics. You can put all in the lowest harmonic, all in the second harmonic, some in the first, some in the second harmonic. There are a lot of things to count, which all have the same total mass and charge. That is where all the entropy in string theory ever comes from. Every calculation for a black hole entropy all goes in just this way. So I just show you the details of how this simple one is done for the case of two charges, and all the other things like the Strominger-Wafer calculus for three charges are all absolutely in the same spirit.
So the momentum can be just some multiple of 1 over LT, I guess.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I'm going to show you here. So you see in this process an interesting issue which is called fractionation. If you take a compact circle and you wrap a string on it and you put momentum on it, then the momentum has to come in units of 2 pi over L. So that's just standard, because this is quantization of momentum on a circle of length L. But if you have wrapped the string, let's say, N1 times around that circle, then in fact if you open it up, the string has a total length, which is N1 times L, which is L total, LT. Now you see the momentum on this comes in units of 2 pi over LT, exactly as Don was just saying, which is 2 pi over N1L. This issue will be very important because as we said right on the first slide, what we're going to make is something called the fractional brain gas. Now you can see the issue of fractionation. A momentum charge by itself, a graviton living on a circle by itself, has to come in whole units of 2 pi over L. If L is Planck scale, the energy of that is Planck scale. But if you take a momentum charge and you bind it to a large number of strings, N1, then it comes in units which is 1 over N1 times 2 pi over L. Okay. So that's a very basic lesson in string theory, even though it's just elementary quantum mechanics here, that when one kind of object in string theory binds to a large number of another kind of objects, it comes in fractional units. I'll come back to this lesson. Okay, so now we have this, these fractional pieces on there, but you can count very easily. We're going to count how many ways there are to partition it. Each momentum quantum comes in, carries momentum 2 pi k over Lt, where k now goes in units of 1, 2, 3. If we had put Np units of momentum over here, total momentum charge was 2 pi Np over L. I can rewrite that as 2 pi N1 Np over Lt. I write it like this because they all come in units of 1 over Lt. So in fact, all the solutions are of this problem is if I take in the harmonic k on the total string, nk units in harmonic k. Let's shift this again.
Why did the total have to be some multiple
2 pi over L?
That just comes from quantum mechanics because if you have a circle, doesn't matter what system is doing inside it, the translation invariance around this, if you apply the translation operator which brings you back to itself, that has to go in units of 2 pi over L. So what you have to do is you can take nk units of the kth excitation, but because that carries 2 pi k over Lt, k times nk summed over all the k should give you n1np. All the solutions of this, any ways of partitioning this number, this is called partitions of an integer, that's the count of states. That's where all the entropy of anything comes from in string theory. So there's all these different ways of partitioning the momentum among different harmonics. So you have to solve this equation, count how many of these there are. And it turns out the answer for that grows exponentially in the number of things you had. It goes to e to the root n. So in fact, you get, depending exactly how many directions you made compact, we had compact part is one circle I kept showing you, but typically also compactify other directions because you want to make a black hole in 5 dimensions or 4 dimensions. Depending on how many you make compact, the prefactor can change a little bit depending on what exactly you have. But the number, if you take the log of the number of states to get the entropy grows with the number of charges. Okay, and now this is where you connect to black holes. We had taken N1 units of string winding and N2 units of momentum. To somebody who cannot resolve the compact direction, it just looks like a blob carrying that much charges, winding charge, momentum charge. I don't know what this is doing. Just get out of this guy. Sorry about that. So what's going on? Should I just exit this machine and just go down to this?
Seems like a good idea.
Yeah. Okay, is this what I was?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, next one. So now if you make a black hole with these charges, so then you can just solve Einstein's equations for that much mass and that much charge. You get some kind of a structure. You can find the horizon. You can measure its area, get the Bekenstein entropy, and in fact you find that it exactly agrees with the microscopic target states. Okay. So that's the story of how black holes work. And this two-charge extremal black hole case, in fact, is the simplest of all the cases. And you can find that the Bekenstein kind of entropy exactly equals the count of states. So whatever gravity was giving you, the way it reproduced is that you count all the vibrations. And all the other...
A over 4 go to A over 2?
Yeah, in this case, you get actually A over 2G because this is what is called a small black hole. It's small black hole because you need to use the R squared terms in the string action as well as the R term. The actual Ward entropy gets a contribution A over 4G from the R term and an equal amount A over 4G from the R squared term and becomes A over 2G. But that's why you would like to go to put more charges because one charge, one kind of charge gave us no entropy. Two kinds of charges gives us a black hole, which is small enough that the R and the R squared terms, the Einstein action are both important. The moment I put three kinds of charges, which I'll do now, in fact, you note the hole becomes big enough, the R squared terms are not relevant, and then that's the Strom-Yerwafa calculation. Anyway, before I go to that, I just want to emphasize this fractionation description because that's going to be important for what we do with brains. As we said, by doing dualities, you can take the string and you can map it to some other kind of brain. I just drew it like this. You can take this graviton running around a circle, the momentum charge, you can map it to some other brain, maybe a brain running like this. Then this guy carrying momentum and winding in this direction, it actually becomes some brains this way and some brains that way. But the thing that the way the brains behave in string theory is that brains can end on other brains like this. So if you had, let's say, 10 brains like this, well, in this picture I have 4 brains like this of the red brains, and then I have some blue brains, the blue brains sort of can break up into pieces, and then these pieces move independently here. But can you see how many of these pieces there are? If I had N1 brains this way and N2 brains this way, there are actually N1 times N2 of these little pieces. And this is exactly the dual of the description under dualities of getting N1 times NP of these fractional momentum modes running on a string which is already wound many times over. Okay. So in fact, the general entropy you can then see is going to be just square root of the two kinds of brains, symmetrical in how you break it up. And these fractional pieces, that's what gives the entropy. And this is what is called a fractional brain gas over here. And that's what gives you the entropy. You can again count how many states you get there. But can you get even more entropy? If you had these two kinds of charges, N1, N2, suppose the total energy you had to do this was E. Okay. So then you put, let's put half the energy in the first kind, half the energy in the second kind. We'll see it actually equipartitions by itself. The entropy goes like E times E, and then there's a square root, right, here. So it goes like E. So when you put two kinds of charges together with just a vibrating string, you get the Hagedorn kind of physics. S goes like E. But can you mix three different kinds of charges? And do you think that will give you square root of N1, N2, N3? If I get things like that, then when each of them goes like E, the whole thing will go like E to the 3/2. So those guys will have even more entropy. We had E to the 3/4 for just radiation. We're just going like E when we got vibrating strings or any two charge objects. They all dual to each other. And if you mix three kinds of charges, we can get E to the 3/2. Well, that's exactly what was done to get the Strominger-Wafa black hole. And that's the story here. So if you start with the 10-dimensional string theory, they made compact 5 of them into circles. See, 5 of them are circles, but you just keep one of them as 4 of them as T4 and just single out one because you'll wrap strings on that one. So strings are wrapped on this compact dimension. This side you can call the T4 if you like. So you also take some 5 brains. We already had 1 brains. Strings are like 1 brain, so let me call them D1 brains for the moment. We had the momentum mode running in that direction. That's the same as before. But we also have a compact 4 other guys. So if there are 5 compact directions, I can also wrap 5-dimensional brains on them. N1 of these, N5 of these, NP of these. If you see how many states that makes, they counted them and they got this number. Now if you go and make a black hole carrying all these three kinds of charges, you get some kind of a geometry. You measure the area of the horizon. This time the R term dominates over the R square term. The answer is just A over 4G as you expect. And the number is exactly right down to the last factor of 2. Okay? So that's the story of the counting again. And the important thing that we need to note for this talk is that you end up multiplying all these numbers.
Sorry,
this
is E to the 3/2, not E
squared.
So.
This is a black hole in 5D. See, we compactified only five guys, so we're left with M4, 1. That's the case that Strominger-Wafa did, but it was soon found that all the cases actually worked the same way. So now, as we said, if we have three guys, the entropy goes like E to the 3/2. And again, if you just go to other dual frames with the strings and momentum modes wrapped to other brains, what is happening is some brains go this way, some brains go that way. It's all coming, the entropy in string theory always comes from intersecting points of brains. So if I put, let's say, N1 brains this way, N2 brains this way, and N3 brains this way, the number of intersection points is N1 times N2 times N3. How you group them together into different groups, the kind of breaking a number into partitions, summation over k, N1, N2, we have made it equal to some total number. Yeah. That is the count which goes like, and then that gives you an entropy, which goes like e to the root N1, N2, N3. The mass is the same every time. And if you take the four-charge extremal case, which has, if you put four kinds of charges together, that's how black holes are made in 3+1 dimensions, you actually get N1, N2, N3, N4, again making each of them go like E. This time you get E squared. That's the black hole in 4 dimensions. So so in fact, these people just did that soon after Strominger-Wafa's work. And again, there are many ways of taking, you can take momentum charge and D1, D5, and KK monopoles. You can just take D3 brains, any kinds of brains. The point is you take four different kinds of brains. The intersection points are N1, N2, N3, N4 in number, and the entropy goes like that. Okay, so now we have just seen how entropy comes in string theory, and these are very large entropy. This is much more entropy than you would get by taking the same energy and using it just to fill a gas in a box. And that's why the black holes have so much more entropy than just a gas. A gas can never reproduce the entropy of a black hole. But this is why string theory can do it. This is exactly how it does it, and all the factors of two work. The only thing wrong with what we have done so far for the purposes of the universe is that these are all extremal black holes, so they have charge equal to mass. Okay? So what we really need, the universe cannot have any charge because the universe is neutral. There's no place for the charge flux to escape, the field lines to escape. So what we have to do is just spend a little bit of time in seeing what happens if you actually use, if you actually don't have any net charge. So can we go off this extremal thing, not have mass equal to charge, in fact actually go towards, let's say, no charge. So it's often believed that the work of string theory black holes is always for extremal black holes, which are supersymmetric. But actually, there's a large body of results which also takes you off the supersymmetric limit. That part of the work is not that well known, even though it's exactly as clear mathematically. But it's not that well known. So I want to spend a few slides just reviewing that. But the story at the end will be that it works exactly the same way. But you need to see this part of the story, because there is some part of this. The end of this story is what we'll go and put back into our cosmology. So the system we have studied so far are extremal, like three-charge extremal. And so what we did was we took three different kinds of objects, strings, five brains, and momentum modes.
Question. Yeah. So how do you decide how many charges you should put?
You can put whatever. So depending on how many compact dimensions you have, if you gave me only five compact dimensions, there are only three different kinds of brain orientations I can use. If you gave me six compact dimensions, there are actually four different kinds of brains you can use. So black holes in 4D got N1, N2, N3, N4 in the square roots. They went like E squared. Black holes in 5D, they only had five compact dimensions. They went like E to the 3 half. And those are the correct answers for those dimensions. It always works out precisely. But you can see where this is going. In the universe, when I'm at very high densities, I'll have all the dimensions compact. I'll have many things to wrap. And that's how I'm going to get E to the 9 half. Okay, so here what we did was, if my D1 brain charge, I took N1 of D1 brains, N5 D5 brains, NP of the momentum modes, the energy just adds. N1 of these brains, M1 is the mass of any one D1 brain, right? It's the mass of a string. Tension times the length of that string. So mass of one D1 brain times number of D1 brains, mass of five brain times number of D5 brains, mass of a momentum mode is just 1 over the radius of that circle, times the number of momentum modes. Because you have supersymmetry, the energy simply adds. Okay, so this time the mass of that black hole, we knew it was exactly this. That's for the extremal case. But the universe, as we said, is overall neutral. There's no place for the flux to escape. So you have to study the non-extremal states, and the story is actually similar. So right now we've made a Strominger-Wafer black hole with three charges, but now we want to reduce it from three charges to two charges to one to zero. Let's see what we can do. We reduce it to two charges, but we'll add some extra energy to it to make it non-extremal. We want to see what's known about non-extremal systems. So we'll take D1 and D5 charges as before, D1 brains and D5 brains as before, but add a little extra energy, okay? Make the energy above the extremal bound, okay? And let's see what we get from there. So again, you can take a black hole with these charges and some extra mass, because any mass and any charge you can take, and the mass is bigger than the charge, you can find the area of that, get the Bekeson entropy. And the question is, this time, because even though it's not extremal, can you reproduce that by a microscopic counting? If we can, then we are getting to non-extremal guys, and if we can go at the end towards no charges at all, whatever way we understand the entropy of that, that's what we should put into the universe. Can we get that by a microscopic count? And the answer is yes. So how does that work? As we said, we'll take the D1 brains as before and D5 brains as before, but we don't want to put any momentum charge, or at least not as much momentum charge as we initially had, so we'll put some momentum modes going up and some going down. Let's say NP of them going up and NP bar of them going down. Okay? These carry momentum charge, these carry anti-momentum charge. So now you see the total charge of this is less than the mass, because these charges are there as before. These guys carry energy, so it adds to the mass, but their momentum charge is cancelled out. There's no charge there. So these are non-extremal holes. So now the D1 charge, net D1 charge, I'll call them with hats. N1 hat is N1. D5 charge, N5 hat is N5. But the net momentum charge is NP minus NP bar. Okay, is that okay? Now, how do we find the entropy of this guy? Firstly, do we know the energy of this guy? Previously, everything was supersymmetric. You simply add the energies of all the constituents that was given to us by supersymmetry in string theory. But let us try to do the same thing as Karen Maldacena did. Let's try to see if it works. If I simply add the energies of everything, N1 times M1, all the one brains I had times the mass of every one brain, all the five brains I had times the mass of every five brain, and the momentum and anti-momentum modes, let me assume there's no interaction energy between them. Simply add the energies. Just let me write that postulate. For the entropy, let me make a similar postulate. I add square root of N1, N5, NP. Remember that? I multiplied all of them, put them in the square root. I simply add the other term coming from the other guys, as if the left movers had nothing to do with the right movers. I take square root of N1, N5, and NP bar. So I take the left moving gas of vibrations, the right moving gas of vibrations, up guys and the down guys, and I just add them directly. It's just a postulate. But suppose I do that, it turns out, as was found by Karen Maldacena right after the Strominger-Raphael paper, the entropy agrees exactly. Okay, down to the last factor of 2 and pi. So in fact, how do I find these numbers to put in the entropy? How do I find how much is NP, how much is NP bar? Well, these charges N1 and phi, of course, are given to me. But I take the total momentum charge, that gives me NP minus NP bar. I took the total energy, because it told me how much mass the black hole has. That gives me NP plus NP bar, okay, because these numbers are all fixed. With two equations, I find NP and NP bar. If I put them in this postulate formula, it agrees exactly. Okay, so this is an observation. Let's see if we can go better. Firstly, is this agreement a coincidence? It's not a coincidence, because if you have the dynamics of this, the dynamics works out beautifully. So what does that mean? If you have left and right moving guys going up, they can collide. Okay. So when they collide, they emit. There's a radiation rate from that. If you compute this radiation rate, it exactly agrees with the Hawking radiation rate from this black hole. See, now the black hole is not extremal anymore. It does Hawking radiate. In fact, not only the leading order rate, the entire gray body factors work out. Because you get exact calculation down to the last factor of 2, the entire Hawking radiation spectrum is correct. So we know that...
Close to extremal.
Well, I guess they're
close to extremal. Because we took two large charges here, right? This one, and then we added some non-extremality. We are close to extremal. That's why we're moving step by step away from extremality. But because they're not supersymmetric, we have to go slowly and make sure that we have evidence for everything we do, because I want to present the evidence that the non-extremal answer works, because the answer for non-extremal entropy, whatever we postulate, that at last stage we postulate, we stuff into the universe cosmology, right? So we should try to get all the numbers. We know the entire spectrum of gray body factors exactly agrees with what the Hawking radiation is coming from that near-extremal black hole, is coming from exactly these collisions.
Does that mean you're including the back reaction of the network?
So, no, when one Hawking quantum comes out, there's no particular back reaction on the metric, right?
But I'm wondering how the gray body factor comes out. It seems...
Okay, the gray body factor comes out in the following way. Take the metric of the black hole. This is the metric. Is it asking in this calculation or in this calculation?
In the top calculation.
In the top calculation. It's very interesting that here you don't have to put any back reaction of the thing. You just treat them as free objects colliding with the interaction vertex, which can be computed from string theory. And it comes out.
So
no gravitational back reaction, and it's working. Right? So whatever these guys are doing, the mess of this and this, whatever you're computing, is all taking care of and reproducing the effects of gravity. That's the whole beauty of it. Yes. That's the purpose. The structure is very messy, right? All these details of what the strings and brains are doing. That is capturing what a simple, effective metric is doing in the black hole. Yeah.
As you said, you can put many different realizations of these wiggles in the string.
Yes.
Have the same charges.
That's right.
So does your outcome radiation depend on the spectrum that you...
Very good question. So what you do is, for this basic calculation here, what is done is you put them in the... You have a given amount of energy. You put them in the most probable distribution, which is the Bose-Einstein distribution. Right? You take the most likely. If you put that, you get exactly the Hawking radiation. But now we know much more. We know if you can put them in any given state. Okay? Suppose you put them all in the lowest harmonic here. You'll get some other rate of emission, state by state. Okay? For each state here, we can now actually find the exact state on the metric side here. And the rates exactly agree state by state. So that's the kind of work we do. Nowadays, we know exactly what the internal structure of the black hole is. That's what's called fuzzballs, but that's not what this talk is about. But when we find the internal structure of black holes, each state of that fuzzball radiates a certain rate, which exactly ties in with what you put on the vibration modes here. So it's a very pertinent question. But right now, for this purpose, I'm just putting them in the Bose-Einstein distribution. Okay? And then this exactly agrees with the Hawking radiation rate. Okay, so now so far we had two big charges, D1 and D5, and we put the third charge a little bit up and down. I'm trying to go back to zero charges. So now we'll go one more step back, near extremal one charge. I still have lots of these D5 brains and five of them, but I won't have any one brain charge or five of this momentum charge, so I have momentum modes going both up and down, so they can just cancel. I also have D1 brains going both this way and that way, so they can cancel. So my D1 charge, N1 hat, is N1 minus N1 bar. My D5 charge, N5 hat, of course, that is just N5. My momentum charge, N hat, is NP minus NP bar. If I make NP equal to NP bar, I can make this zero also if I want it, but I just keep it arbitrarily. Okay, can we get an expression for the entropy, and does it match the microscopics? Well, as we said, what we are doing is we are postulating the energy just adds. So because I have one brains and anti-one brains, I'll take N1 times M1 and N1 bar times M1, right? Brains going this way and that way just have the same mass. But you can see I'm not putting in any interaction between them. I'm treating them as if they're all free particles. I have n5 times m5, and then np plus np bar times mp. Is that okay? Just extend formula. And again, whatever I did with the microscopic entropy, last time we had root n5, root n1, and then this guy plus this guy bar. Now I have both n1s and n1 bars. I just postulate this formula. Does this give what we would expect from what is called a near-extremal stack of five brains? If I had a lot of five-brain charge, and I just add some energy with no net charge, is it true that I can understand the extra energy as going into 1 and 1 bars and p and p bars? If this postulate works, it should exactly agree with the entropy I get from the metric of something called the near-extremal five-brain, only five-brain charge and extra energy. There's an exact agreement. But let's see how the agreement actually comes out. How are you supposed to find this entropy? There are so many numbers here. Where do you get the numbers from? The five-brain charge, of course, is given to you. That's the charge I put in there. That's a large number in there. But how do you get n1, n1 bar, np, and np bar to put into the formula? You just put the five-brain charge and added some energy. Well, here's one equation, right? How many unknowns do I have? I have n1, n1 bar, np, and np bar. There are four unknowns. How many equations do I have for them? Here's one equation, the net charge of n1 hat, net charge np hat. I choose those. Those are two equations. Total energy, how much I want for the black hole? It's the third equation. I only have three equations. How am I going to know these four numbers which I'm going to actually put in here? Well, it's very simple. You take these three constraints which you have on these four numbers and maximize this expression with respect to the fourth variable. Compute this value at the maximum. So maximize S micro subject to the total charge and total energy constraints. You get exact agreement.
So there's two charges in this thing, is that there?
So all the three charges can be non-zero, right? I mean, you can take this to be zero if you want. But in general, you can even make two of them zero. The third one I'm holding to be a given large number.
Yeah.
So this is what is called, I'll just show you the next slide. One large charge and two small ones. This is what is called a near-extremal five brain. If you just have a D5 brain and you add energy to it, so it's not an extremal D5 brain, you have to ask where does the energy go? And where it goes is, it goes into making one brains, anti-one brains, momentum modes, anti-momentum modes. And it's very interesting. The one brain is going this way, the one brain is going that way. They actually join up into a loop. And the momentum modes going this way, momentum going that way, just make standing waves. And waves and loops together, they bind together, just make vibrating strings. And again, all this, is it a postulate or can we check it? It turns out dynamics again agrees. Because if you take the radiation from a vibrating loop inside this particular sheet, it turns out the rate of radiation again exactly agrees with the rate of Hawking radiation from a near-extremal five-brain. So the dynamics is agreeing. It's not just a coincidence that the other numbers were agreeing. But again, we have a lesson here. And the lesson is that if you add energy to a D5 brain, the energy doesn't just go into the gas of vibrations of the brain. If you take the vibrations of a D5 brain, you don't get the right entropy. You get two less entropy. Entropy is very small. Nowhere near the entropy you get from the metric of a D5 brain. You have to take the whole guys and imagine the extra energy goes to creating one brain and anti-one brains, P and P bar modes. They all join together with this multiple intersection things like we were saying. Every intersection point contributes to the entropy. Then you get exact numbers there, down to the last factor of 2 and pi. Okay. So now we want to come to the last step. We want no large charges, N5 and N5 bars. This picture just means we can take the D5 bar brains with one orientation and the other orientation, strings and anti-string, momentum and anti-momentum modes. The net charges are N1 minus N1 bar, N5 minus N5 bar, NP minus NP bar. You can even make them zero if you like. So they include the short shell black hole now. For the energy, we write exactly the kind of expression as we had before.
What dimension of space-time is this now?
It's still 4 plus 1 non-compact, because I'm taking three of these guys. Yeah. I'll come back to the other one right now, the four-dimensional one also. And then for S micro, we make the same postulate. And again, this time you have six numbers to find, N1, N1 bar, N5, N5 bar, NP, NP bar. The charges fix give you three conditions. Energy gives you the fourth. You can say, I want the black hole to have this charge and this much total mass. You maximize this over the remaining variables with those constraints. You compute the value of S micro there, and you get an exact match. So it's not very well known that this, even the Schwarzschild entropy, which is a complete neutral hole, nowhere near extremal now, matches down to the last factor of 2 and pi. This is work of Horowitz, Malthus, and Stromyanin from 96. It matches down to the last factor of 2 and pi from what you do with string theory. But you have made a postulate. You have said that the entropy formula, which is only root n5, root n1, root np for the extremal case, as long as you keep adding the np bars in the appropriate ways, you exactly get the right answers.
So, I mean, perturbatively, you can make a fairly reasonable argument that non-perturbatively, this is not a controlled argument.
It's not. There's no control in the argument. All one is saying is that if you do this, it's an observation that it works. It's just an observation. But the interesting observation is that what is happening is that you're simply assuming no interaction between these pieces. They're just adding them as if they were free pieces. And the free piece gives the right answer. And there are lots of parameters here which have worked out. It's not just one number which is checking out, because the sizes of the T4 and the S1, all these lengths can be changed. They all cancel out of the calculation. Right? It's always working. All the lengths and all the moduli can be changed. The coupling constant can be changed. There are actually 7 numbers in there. And you get the answer you get this way is exactly the right function down to the last 2n pi as the entropy you get from the Bekeshian entropy when you change all those 7 numbers. Okay? So there's a lot of agreement in there. And it's all just a growth of where we know things exactly at the supersymmetric step, but it had to agree by some index calculations. And then you keep going away from extremality. Even arbitrarily far from extremality, it works exactly. And if you now go back to the 3 plus 1 non-compact, that is 6 compact directions, this time you get 4 things. But if you put the same formula in there, you get a Bekeshian entropy. It again exactly agrees down to the last 2n pi. So we want to do all this
so
just
this
to...
This is down in 3 plus 1
dimensions. This is in 3 plus 1 dimensions. So this is the step we want to make a leap now and make a conjecture, because we have seen all these cases. The other case I didn't list for you here, you can actually compactify one more dimension. You can compactify, we compactified 6, right? You can compactify to 7. Okay? And then you can actually still compute, and the answer still follows the formula. This time there are 5 of these brackets. Okay? That's some work of Otha at a later time in some other context. But the postulate we would like to make is that the formula for the entropy is always given by square root of, if there are capital N different kinds of brains, so N can be 3 or 4, it's not the number of brains, the different kinds of brains. I have Ni of that each kind of brain, Ni bar of each kind of anti-brain. So if the whole thing goes into something with Ni brains and Ni anti-brains, you multiply all these together, there's a constant of order 1 here, because you know it's 2 pi. We know in all the cases done, we know the constant also. But there'll be some constant of order 1 here, and the entropy takes this kind of a formula. This is much more entropy than you get by putting that energy into a gas of vibrations. If that's all that we had in our theory, we would never have understood black holes. The only reason string theory can understand black holes is because it has extended objects. Extended objects get entropy from intersection points. Intersection points grow very rapidly in the energy because the number of brains you make, the number of intersection points keeps growing. It grows as a product of the number of brains you have. That's why if you have capital N brains, and each of the Ni is proportional to E, so you think the whole thing goes like E to the power N by 2, because there's a square root here, E to the power N by 2. And in fact, that's where real entropy of black holes comes from. And what we're going to ask now is, can we make any use of this fact in the early universe? Should we think about this as being relevant to the early universe? There's only one more thing we need to know from this for the purposes of what we want to do in cosmology, and that's the following observation. If the brains wrap a compact direction, so for the brains wrapping this direction, they exert a pressure on that direction. Okay, if you wrap a brain on that direction, it squeezes it down. So if you solve Einstein's equation, the brains wrapped in this direction, at the place where the brains are, circle becomes small. So you can read off the way this thing is falling off at infinity. So at infinity, the whole thing goes like length of a circle. If that was L at infinity, it goes L minus a constant over R, and you can read this off from the gravitational solution.
So I would have expected that they wrapped about a tension.
They have a what?
A tension.
They have a tension. They do have it. Because of the tension, the metric squeezes.
He's using pressure for tension.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so it's negative pressure.
It's negative pressure, absolutely.
It's non-zero.
Yeah, it's non-zero. It's a negative pressure. If you have momentum modes, they have positive pressure. Momentum modes expand, strings contract. So they do that. So in the end, all of them have to balance out. Okay. So then it turns out the pressure that you compute from the black hole metric, see, we compute the energy from the metric, energy is like T00. But the TIIs also work exactly if you simply add the tensions of the brains and the anti-brains, assuming no interaction, the flat space values. Okay, so the TII, T00 is the energy we were talking about, but the pressures also add. Well, it's not just to summarize everything in one slide, all that I have told you so far. The moral from all that we know about black holes and string theory is that things simplify dramatically at high density. Once you use the correct variables, which are these fractional brains, you know, Ni's and Ni bars, all the macroscopic properties of a black hole are given by a simple sum over contributions from individual brains and anti-brains. The charges are given by Ni hat, Ni minus Ni bar, that of course had to be. Energy is given by simply adding them, assuming no interaction energy. Pressures are given by simply adding the tension of each of those brains. And then the entropy is given by a formula which looks like this. Everything that we have talked about is in this slide. And everything we have learned from black holes across maybe 100 different papers all goes into proving just this. It's all summarized in here. The analogy for this is if you take hadron physics, it's very complicated. If two hadrons collide, almost nobody wants to deal with that. But if you go to very high energies, okay, then the whole thing becomes a quark gluon plasma. And the higher the energy I go to, if I use the right variables, which are not hadrons but quarks, then everything is free. You simply add the individual energies, pressures, whatever, like simple Fermi gases of things, and everything is completely simple. So these fractional brains are the right objects in terms of them when you think. The higher the energy density you go to, the freer everything becomes. So it's not like the brains are free. You've put lots of brains in this room. They're bound to each other. They've broken up on each other to make fractal brains. But these fractal brains, the higher the energy density, the more they behave like free constituents. You can add their mass. You can add the entropies. You can add the, not add the entropy. The entropy is the product. You add the pressures. And the bigger the mess, and the more the energy density there, the more accurately that works. That's the lesson we have learned from black holes.
Does this pressure mean that you have to include moduli stabilization in your torsional capacitor
system? So the moduli, whether they stabilize or not, we have to ask what the thing does. Like if I take this room, I know what the pressure is, I know what the energy is, it will just evolve by itself. If it doesn't want to stabilize, it won't. So that's what I have to ask them. That's what I'm going to do.
So do I get to ask about black holes?
You get it.
We're talking about this very homogeneous thing.
Yes.
Sounding thing.
You will ask about black holes and I will answer that, I promise.
So you're saying still late?
Yes, still late. That's the answer. Still late, yeah.
I mean, you also said high density, but of course this applies, I mean, the bubbles become good fit when enough black holes are big, but big is low density. So it seems to be the
opposite. I'll come and tell you about the black holes. Yeah, just wait for a second. Black holes. Yeah, another question.
So you are considering near extreme on brains.
No, now, the whole point is now, in the previous slide I have gone, all this was to show you that the same logic works arbitrarily far from extremity. Even the Schwarzschild black hole is captured by this formula exactly down to the last 2 pi. Okay. It's not like we are proving this must be the formula because there's no supersymmetry protection. But the observation from black holes is that at large masses, they are much bigger than M Planck. These formulae are all exact. That's the only lesson I want to draw from all this, because after that we can just go ahead and do what we want. Okay, so here's the calculation. I won't take in details, so it's all in the paper with my student, which I had written. But this is what we want to do. We have taken the universe to be a torus, and the parent of all string theory is what's called M theory, lives in 10 plus 1 space-time directions. I'll compactify all of them. There's just a torus now for me. I'll choose some direction. I'll say, okay, there's this many brains in this direction, this many in this direction. I'll choose appropriate sets of directions and wrap different types of brains and anti-brains on them. Of course, the universe is neutral, so I'll put as many brains as anti-brains on every direction. I'll cancel them. The mass of any one brain I know is the tension of the brain, a well-defined known number for every number in string theory, times the product of the lengths of all the cycles. If the length is L1 times L2, the area of that cycle is L1 times L2. If the brain is a two brain, I know its tension. Okay, so I know the mass of each brain of each kind. We said universe is neutral, so the mass of the brains, so it should be Ni. Ni is equal to Ni bar. And the entropy then just becomes products of the Ni, right? It was root Ni plus root Ni bar, but if Ni is equal to Ni bar, just get a factor of 2, and it's just the products of all the Ns. Okay, so I know everything in the setup, and that's my assumption. I'm just taking the whole universe of the torus. I just wrap the brains. I just want to see what kind of state I get and what I can do with it. Then what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to take the formula for the entropy, this formula, and then we have to try to maximize this for a given energy, like this. The charge is already neutral, so the charge parts have already been put in by putting only the Ni's. So I maximize this by putting Lagrange multiplier. When you do that, you find the number of brains of each kind, Ek, if the total energy was E, it comes out to be something. Okay, so don't look at the algebra, I'll just show you the results at the end. But one interesting thing comes out for each kind of brain, let's say the brain's going this way and the brain's going that way, the total energy actually becomes the same for all of them. Energy becomes equipartition. So if you had brains this way, which were very low energy because these cycles were smaller, there'll just be more of these guys. And these cycles were bigger, so these brains had more energy each, the ones, the blue ones, but there'll be less of them. So if the total energy in each kind of brain, which is number of brains of that kind times the mass of each brain of that kind, it actually becomes independent of which brain you have. Just gets the equipartition. This is just what's coming out of the calculation. Okay, the stress tensor we know now because the brain has tension, negative pressure, as you were just asking, along the directions it wraps, and zero pressure in the transverse directions. We know exactly the tensions of all the brains, so we can write the stress tensor for every brain. But from what we have learned about black holes, we should simply add the contributions from all the brains and anti-brains. We'll do that so we know all the stress tensor. Let there be n different kinds of brains and anti-brains. So n was just 3 for Strominger-Waffer, right? 3 kinds of brains. In 4 dimensions, n was 4. So number of kinds of brains, not the number of brains. So let ni of these extend along the direction xi. So my universal direction is x1, x2, x3, up to x10. Let ni of them extend the given direction. And these are important numbers to define. I'll define the number wi to be ni over n. Let's just understand what that is in a simple example. If I'm wrapping brains on this cycle and on this cycle, I'm not telling you how many of each kind there are, but if these are cycles I choose to wrap them on, their capital N is 2. There are only 2 kinds of brains, this kind and this kind. The W in the x1 direction, well, both the brains wrap this direction. Okay, this direction is wrapped by both the blue brain and the green brain. So ni is 2, two kinds of brains wrap that direction, total n is 2, so wi is 1. If I look at this direction, the green brain wraps it, but the blue brain does not. So ni is equal to 1, n is 2, so wi is a half, there it is. And the third wi is also a half. So you get all these numbers w, which just tell you how many brains wrap that direction. You can see why this is relevant. If many brains wrap a direction, then a lot of tension, it will be squeezed in. If fewer brains wrap the direction, it will be squeezed out. Okay. And when you do that and put it all back in the full set of equations, you find the pressure in the ith direction is actually equal to wi times rho. It's a big simplification. You find wi's are just constants, numbers you know from how you set it up. But the dynamics tells you when you extremize that entropy, that extremization problem we did, the pressure in the ith direction is a constant times rho, where rho is the energy density of the universe. So just the total mass divided by the total volume. So now our Einstein's equation we have to solve is clear. We take a Kastner-type ansatz. So we take minus dt squared plus some scale factors for each of these directions times dxi squared. And the Einstein equation, we have solved Einstein's equations with pi equal to a constant times rho. Now we are down to a mathematical problem of solving Einstein's equations. So even though this is a very simple Kastner ansatz, somehow we didn't find this thing solved in the literature before. But it's interesting that actually you can solve the whole thing in closed form. So you just have a simple Kastner ansatz. Normally the Kastner cosmologies are empty. This is not empty, right? It has got stuff in it. But the stuff is very simple. The pressure in the ith direction is a number, which depends on which of the direction it is, times rho. If I give you these numbers, all these scale factors can be solved for in closed form. They come from which brain wrappings I chose. So if I choose these kinds of wrappings, the wi's come out to be these. So they're not completely arbitrary. The number of brains, kinds of brains you have in string theory are definite numbers. I'll show you the answers, the solutions at the end for different values of wi.
So you think
you can choose them.
There are specific sets of NIs.
There are specific sets of NIs which are allowed by the brain intersections of string theory. So it's not that I can make them an arbitrary number if I want to. Okay, and here's the solution. You don't really want to see it except to know that it is there. You define capital W to be sum of all these constants. Remember, these are just the constants which brain wrappings you chose. This is sum of their squares. These are two constants. Then you define two more constants in terms of them. Pardon?
I say it's not one. I mean, let's see. I mean, I would have thought that the total number of all the NIs is just n, but is that not true or not, or is it true?
If you add all the NIs, no, it's not n, because NI is the number of guys which wrap a given direction, right? So some directions are wrapped by both guys.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So you can.
Which brains can wrap which guys, yeah. If you add all of them, you'll probably get the dimension of each brain times. You can add the dimension of all the brains, and that's what we'll give you. So anyway, you define two more constants. D is the total dimension of space-time, which is 11 out here. Just two more constants and define some more constants. Okay, a lot of constants defined in terms of those. But then here's the full answer. The scale factors go with time. Time is tau, which is defined in terms of the actual t, which we use in the Kastner metric by this inverse relation, which is just an incomplete beta function. So if you inverse, write the time t, if we define tau as a beta function inverse of t, in terms of that, you simply get a power law solution like this for AK. So it's a very simple thing. If you take a Kastner universe, with all the AKs displaying different rates, but each rates you have, the pressure is just equal to a number, fixed number, times rho. If you can solve it exactly, this is the expansion. Okay, so I don't want to show you the details of that.
How many dimensions expand and how many contract and so on?
Yeah, it depends on your initial conditions and the values of the tensions. So I just show you some particular examples. But because the whole thing is in closed form, you can just go and work out any case that you wanted. At late times, the evolution becomes a power law. So here's a simple case where I took wi equal to 0.2 for all the i. So you had tension in all the directions. If you have m2 brains in all the directions, just one particular case we took, if because they have tension, the brains have tension, the wi has come out to be minus something. For all the i, if you take all the starting radii equal, you find the scale factor then just goes off like a power law like this. Here, the wi chose to be different numbers like this. And they start all the ai with the same value and same time derivative. Some expand, some contract. You're asking if some can expand, some can contract. So we did lots of these cases. You can see our paper just playing out with this because the whole thing is then closed form. You can just do it all explicitly. But what we were looking for was to see the thing ever inflates. And by inflation, at that point, we just want to know whether you can ever get something growing with a power of t which is bigger than 1. We didn't get it. We always got power of t less than 1. It's interesting. So we tried all, maybe there's some case where someone can do better, but we tried lots of cases because you're taking pretty extreme values.
I think the question, why WI can be negative?
Pardon?
WI can be negative.
Yeah, I think when I initially wrote it down, I didn't write it properly. WI is actually, in a given direction, I could count NI as a minus one if it exerts a tension. If it exerts an outward pressure, like if you had a momentum mode in that direction, its pressure is outwards. If there's a gravity mode in that direction, that's one of the charges. So that's why W is looking negative. Yeah.
Can it be even, so NI
could
be greater than N, right? So it could be actually smaller than minus
1
or something?
Any given NI cannot be greater than N.
Okay.
Because NI was the number of directions the brain wraps, and total number of kinds of brains. So NI was the number of brains which wrap a given direction, and total is the number of brains that you can have. So let me just go back to that slide. So here, capital N is the total number of types of brains. So here N was 2 because there are 2 types of brains. For any given direction, let's say x1, you can see how many guys out of this N actually wrap it. If both of them wrap it, you can go all the way to 1. If only one of them wraps it and the other doesn't, you'll get half.
So the WI can go anywhere from 0, well, it wraps from any...
From minus 1 to 1, right? Because if it's a tension direction, it will be called a minus 1.
But wait a minute, but this is integer. I would have assumed that N and NI are integers.
They are integers.
Are they integers?
I think that was a mistake in what I wrote in the sign here. Okay, but if it's a tension in some direction, it's a minus 1. If it's a pressure in that direction, it's a plus 1.
Okay, but I mean, it doesn't, there's no other thing that makes the magnitude change? I mean, it just goes
no,
from minus
just,
1 to plus 1 or something?
Right, this is just integer. Just rational numbers which are integer upon integer.
Sorry?
This is integer upon integer.
What determines the sign?
What determines the what? The sign.
You're saying it's not... I mean, you have that formula, but then the next page you have minus sign. So somewhere
the minus sign corresponds to the fact if you actually have a brain wrapping some direction, a brain has negative tension.
Right.
If you had a momentum mode in that direction, wrapping that direction, it has a positive tension.
So there's just two choices. It's either plus one or minus one.
It's either plus one or minus one. For any of the actual brains. So if I take this particular direction, if there was a momentum mode in that direction and a brain wrapping that direction, I'll actually get 0.
Okay.
Minus 1 plus 1, I'll get 0.
So it's 3 choices. You take that number up there, and then you multiply by plus 1, 0, or minus 1.
There are many choices, right? Suppose I have 7 different kinds of brains.
For each I. Okay, you have this formula here. Then the next page you put in some signs. So you take this expression, and to get to the next page, are there 3 choices you can multiply by?
There's a typo out here in terms of signs. Okay, so I'm sorry about it. There's a typo in terms of signs. But all I'm saying is that suppose total N was 7. There were 7 different kinds of brains.
Right.
I take any given direction. This is 7. But out of all the brains I have, suppose 2 of them have tension in that direction. I count it as 2. One of those brains has an outward pressure in that direction. I count it as minus 1. I get something. That net number is out here.
Okay, and there's no... and
it could be 1 by 7.
I mean, but why is it that if it's tension, it's exactly the opposite to pressure? I mean, why is it if go from plus 1 to minus 1 rather than some other number? I mean, I'm confused why the tension is... Why does it have the same magnitude as
okay,
the pressure?
I think that's because for that, I think you'll have to actually see how the solution actually worked out. But...
Maybe we should
the solution worked out, yeah. We can just go to the math later. But it's just these are just numbers. It actually doesn't depend on the actual tension of the brain. It all comes from how the thing is equipartitioned. So if a brain had more tensions, you're saying, what are the actual values of the tension the brain is not sure? But it doesn't.
You assume the brains don't interact because that worked for the black holes?
Yeah, the brains are not interacting for sure.
That's certain.
That's true. The brains are, that's what we put into the answers, right? The brains are not interacting. That we have put in. But I think what Don was asking was, what about the actual tension of the brain? That's the number, right? Why is that number not showing up? But that's not showing up, because if you have tension in a given direction, it affects the power in a certain way. It's only the powers at which they grow, which actually come in here. The actual values of tensions have all gone in the previous page. See, here all the TPs were there, the tensions of all the brains were there. Okay? But when you actually did the extremization, when you extremize, you find that it doesn't matter what the masses of each of the brains were, the tension of the brains go in here. Because of energy equipartition, when you extremize this S, the actual of T's cancel out.
And the fact that the brains don't interact, is that justified with some calculation, or is it assumed?
It's only being assumed because that's what happened in the black hole. So that's why we did all this work out black hole for the first 45 minutes. It's all because of black hole. And the black hole, this cancellation is the actual tension. Why does tension not matter? That's the beauty of the black hole. See, in the black hole, the entropy of the black hole does not depend on the tension of the brains. It's root n1, n2, n3, n4. It's a pure number. You can change the moduli. If you change the moduli, the mass of the brains changes. Right? If I change the wrapping cycle, the mass of each brain will change. The numbers of brains readjust, so the entropy doesn't depend on the cycle lengths. So these TPs are all cancelled. It's part of the way the structure of the black hole works. There's a lot of inner beauty into how the black hole thing ever worked out in string theory. And all the structures in here. And that's why some things look mysterious. But in the black hole, why do you get a neat answer like root n1, n2, n3, n4? Where are the sizes of the cycles? Where are the tensions of the brains? It's very important they all have to go. They all make G Newton and they cancel out. Otherwise, the entropy would never be right.
So you're saying there is no inflation, but in some sense what you're using classical objects that we have in string theory, and there are also snowball theorems that pretty much get in keys.
I think that's exactly what.
Like from
I'm not surprised that.
Knows
you're
that
right.
We need non-perturbative effects in order to start inflating.
Exactly. That's exactly. Yeah.
So, are you thinking of one single solution, or are you thinking you're going to put different value in W
R? We'll try different value in W R, right? Because these things which I showed you.
Okay, but then
I try different sets of W's.
So I can have a nine brain, right? Which is going to be at the main wall.
Okay, so I didn't actually use a nine brain. Since I was doing M theory, I only used M2 and M5 and momentum modes.
See, what I'm saying is that you know that the domain wall has the decided like
I understand.
Solution. So
if you actually put a nine brain in string theory and a dilaton was frozen for you, see, dilaton is the size of the extra direction.
Are we talking about nine brain in 10 dimensions? Or
that's exactly what I'm trying to
say. I'm talking about the real domain wall, so it would be an eight brain in 10 dimensions.
Okay.
So it has a codimension one.
But can you do that in N theory?
I don't know. That's why I asked you before if you're going to choose these numbers yourself or they are fixed.
No, you can choose them. You can choose them if you tell me what brains they are. You put in that brain, you'll get these numbers. If you want to put in 8 brains, you can do that.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that I think that if we think of 10 dimensions or any dimensions, if you look at the codimension one of it has solutions which are going to be inflated.
It could be. And I think you should try it with those W's. I don't actually know the answer of what you will get.
But you're going to be like in the back reaction anyway. So this effect would not happen in your setup where you don't include the...
No, at the point of solving Einstein's equations, we have put in what the brains do. And we have solved the Einstein's equation with their stress tensor. I didn't use anything beyond M2, M5 and momentum modes because those are what sort of the quotient charges, because there's always something a little bit funny with the domain wall. You can't actually put more than one of them because of an anomaly, and there are lots of things, right? The number of nine brains you can have in string theory is fixed by the anomaly. So those are not normal particles. The number of particles that you can actually have as normal particles are only M2 and M5, apart from the gravitons. I just use those. Yeah.
If you could comment on how this relates to the work of Brian and Daniel Cavante. They had looked at M theory.
I'll tell you that. I'm almost there. So I'm just, all my technical work is done. I just want to show you that. So I'm also out of time, so just take maybe 5 minutes just to quickly round this up. So we didn't get inflation, but let's conjecture what we get. We just got what we got, right? We had no choices anywhere. So at early times, if you have 10 compact dimensions, you can actually have 9 different kinds of brains. And then as the universe expands, it turns out the entropy is maximized when you have less and less of brains. So by the time the universe becomes very big, it is expanding, right? All the A scale factors are growing typically. At some point, it becomes cheaper to actually have it as radiation. So at the very early universe, they start like this. It didn't get these jumps, but we haven't really computed. We wanted to, but we never got around to doing that. And the details of all that, I will skip the details of that, but we actually know how these transitions happen and exactly at what volume they jump, because that's exactly the physics of the Gregory-Laflamme transition, which we have worked out in terms of microscopics some time back. If you have a small direction which is compact, you get a black string. If you make the direction bigger, you know it drops down to a black hole. In microscopic terms, when you understand everything through these brains in string theory, if you have brains wrapping that direction and any other directions, you get a black string. When that direction becomes too long, the brains in that direction want to not stretch. You only get the remaining brains and you get the black hole. So we know when this size becomes bigger than something, the brains in that direction become too expensive and the energy is put into the other brains. All the details of the Gregory-Laflamme phase diagram can be reproduced by these exact entropy formulae I had shown you. So we know how these things happen. So as the directions expand, more of those brains just snap. And in the end, you'll be left with just radiation. We haven't done that calculation, but it looks reasonable that that's what would happen. So brain anti-brain annihilation, as you will, is actually a slow process because the rate of annihilation we know exactly. When the momentum anti-momentum modes are annihilated, it gave you the Hawking radiation, the gray body factors of which worked out down to the last factor of 2. These annihilate very slowly. There's a power of h there, if you like, or a power of 1 over the number of brains that you had in there. If the annihilation is not complete, you may be left with some brains and anti-brains stuck in this Calabria manifold at different places, like this KKNT people use in their scenario, and then you might get into a phase which is actually inflating. So we haven't played with any of this, but it's possible that at very high densities, you have to start here, because this is where, if you really crush something, you get a lot of entropy if you start there. As things cool down, if you get stuck in these phases, it may be useful because this may actually tell you what is the probability for being stuck in different KKNT phases, because for this you can just arrange things by hand and then try to expand. But maybe this will tell you how you actually get there. You have lots of brains, few kinds of brains, and finally left with a few of them. It may be possible that some of the fractal brains never annihilate, and you may have to worry about whether you see that as some kind of dark matter today. But in fact, it changes other things that you have to think about as well. Because what do you think about the horizon problem in cosmology? Normally, quantum non-locality is over distance like Planck length, but this fractal brain state is actually correlated across the entire box. So what is happening in this fractal brain state is that the non-locality scale, instead of being Planck length, is the number of brains. So you know, this n is now the number of actual brains. So it just grows to infinity with lots of brains. It goes like n to the power alpha. There's some positive alpha times Planck length. The whole thing is one quantum mess because the fractal brains really break across the entire brain and they move apart from each other. So it's not even clear what the locality scale is. And clearly you should also think about the flatness problem again, because now everything has to come from a, if your principle here that you're looking for the state with maximum entropy, if you put the same thing on a curved space, somebody was asking about that before also, if that gives you less entropy for this fractal brain gas than the flat one, everything is determined by the entropy. The entropy is so large that if the curved space had even a little bit less entropy than the flat one, when you put in the fractal brain gas on it, the thing will just try to flatten itself. So we don't know about any of these. It's just saying that there are a lot of things to study if you want to study this gas in detail. But I just want to close with two small observations, which both pertain to questions that people were asking. Firstly, how does it compare to the brain gas that people like Brian Green and Kabat and so on were playing with? Actually, it's completely different from the fractal brain gas that we have been talking about. In a normal brain gas, the density of brains is very low. So this is occasionally interact. There's one brain here, there's one brain here, they may once in a while meet. And the entropy there is actually always hanging on, proportional to the area, is proportional to the energy. Why is that? That's because the brain here, it gets an extra piece, it can stretch. That costs you energy proportional to the area. But then there are vibrations on the surface of the brain, and the entropy of those vibrations has to exactly cancel the energy of the brain, so to get the free energy down to zero. So those brains, whatever their dimension, they always hang it on. S goes like E. We have done something very different. The brains have been crushed together to a density which is like they become Planck distance apart, they form a bound state, in the bound state brains break on brains, the entropy then goes like e to the power 9/2, that's the phase we've been talking about, that's like the black hole phase when you really crush things. There, this phase had nothing to do with that phase, but this phase is the one which is completely motivated at these high densities from what we have seen, and finally down to saying something about black holes. Really my last two slides, but I finally do come back to what you were asking me. So if you just had radiation in a box, we take this to be the state of the universe, something you can always ask is, if I took this instead of dust, I was trying to take things which had a little more entropy, otherwise I could equally well have taken dust. But then if I'm looking for more entropy, why don't I put everything in black holes? That might have even more entropy than this. Now the only reason we don't do that is because we wouldn't know what to do with it, because we don't see black holes around and what happens to these guys. But let's pursue this. Even this is a little bit funny, because okay, I could do even better by making it all into one black hole. But let's keep asking, what happens if I have put even more energy in the box that would fit into one black hole, right? Because we saw there's no limit to how much E you can put in a given volume. So if this room is my volume, I put some energy E, I make a black hole, I put more energy, it can be a bigger black hole, I put enough energy in the black hole as big as a room, okay, good, and I put even more, where does it go? Now normally in this picture I would be puzzled because I don't know how to make a black hole out of it, but I can put more energy. But actually now we know the answer to that. And the answer is very interesting. These black holes are actually made of D brains, which let's say wrap all the compact directions. That's what this picture shows you, right? They're wrapping the compact directions which I haven't drawn here. And now as you saw from the Gregory-Laflamme transition, what happens is, as you make this black hole bigger and bigger, when the black hole becomes big enough to touch the walls of this box, exactly like happened in the Gregory-Laflamme transition, you get more brains which also wrap these directions. So what happens is, as you keep increasing the mass in this black hole, first you were wrapping, let's say, six of the compact dimensions, and these directions were not wrapping. So in these directions, the brains were just sort of swelling out to the size of this horizon. Once the horizon becomes big enough to actually start touching the remaining walls of your universe, as because the whole universe or the black holes are merging, you wrap those directions as well. So now you can wrap all the 10 directions, and instead of getting just E squared for four-dimensional black holes, you can go all the way to E equals 9/2. And you can keep going, because it doesn't matter how much energy you put in it, you're much past the black hole value now. You give me any energy E, the formula E to the 9 half just keeps working. You can keep adding more energy. So the fundamental law for entropy probably is not area upon 4. Okay, I'll just show you what that means. This looks like the more fundamental law. It always gives you area upon 4 in the following situation. When a black hole has a place to expand into asymptotically flat space, you put more energy, it sort of swells into the remaining space, and you get this answer. But this answer is actually equal to this answer, right? We saw this from black holes. But the point is, this is actually the more fundamental formula, which you can see from the following analogy. If you take a box and you put a balloon in it, and you blow air in it, at first, the more mass you put, the bigger the area of the balloon. Okay? At some point, it will fill up the whole box. Does it mean you can't put more air in it? No, of course you can. Now, as you blow it up more, the area doesn't increase anymore. But in fact, the more mass you put, just the pressure in the balloon keeps rising. So there is a formula which will work even after you've actually exhausted all your directions, and then you get back just to the gas formula there. So this formula actually works. This formula, I think, is probably going to be more universal, because just coming from putting brazed and entropy in some compact directions, whenever the other directions to for the whole thing to expand into, it actually is also equal to this. When there are no more directions to expand into, and you keep pumping more and more, so you wrap all the directions, this formula keeps working. It works for all E.
You said at the beginning the box wasn't going to matter. This really looks like it matters.
Good. I'll talk about that as well. So if you had a universe as a torus, let me first say that I can go even past the black hole size, and the black holes fit the whole thing, and I keep putting more energy, this formula continues to work, and this one doesn't make any sense. Okay, that's what I'm saying. So in some sense, we took all the black hole lesson there, and just for the moment, keeping it to be a torus. I'll tell you what happens if I take the torus away in a second. This is pretty much my last slide, so I basically ended with that. So results from the black hole string theory are very solid, and they suggest that this is a formula which works for all the black holes. So that part after the black hole is okay. Now I want to put this into cosmology, and really, I'm not saying the universe has to work like this. I have no idea what the universe should do, because the universe needs initial conditions, and we don't know what they are. We should look for things which expand at the fastest rate, you know, or which states are selected by some principle. We don't really know the principle. So we just put the whole thing as a question. Now that we know that these states are definitely there in string theory, they're the very high entropy states in string theory, much more entropy than a gas of gravitons, do they actually have a role in cosmology? What should we do with that? So I'll leave it like a question. I'm not saying the universe has to do this. But if the universe has to do this, there's certainly a way to get maximum entropy in a box. With that entropy and the pressures which come along with that, I know how to solve the equation in closed form. And they give power law. That's all I have really told you in concrete terms. Okay, there's a lot of evidence for this I gave you. With that, you can solve the whole thing. That's just algebra. However,
so there's this formula of the entropy, there is an implicit assumption that you stabilize both the moduli and the torus.
No, there isn't. Because there is no moduli to stabilize. The point is all the directions, all the 10 directions are here.
Right.
And in fact, they do not stabilize. What happens is all the directions, I showed you all the AI going like power law, right? I have 10 different AI because there are only 10 directions.
Yeah.
All of them are going.
Right. So
and in fact, the moduli do not stabilize.
Okay.
So in fact, only at the later stages where the brain's mostly annihilated, left maybe a few brains and anti-brains, then you can go back to using the extra moduli stabilization from the quantum instrument processes, and then you may get into the KKLP phase, and you can go. This is really supposed to be at flying densities and beyond. As you go to infinite density, what does string theory tell you? This is supposed to be the answer to that question.
But why would you believe it that you had all this no interaction stuff, so why would you believe it if it got up to the Planck density?
Why would you believe you should use a no interacting formula?
Yeah.
Exactly because the black holes use it. Because in the black hole
case, the black holes are big compared to the Planck scale, so their density is low.
Okay, so let's talk about that. You got into a black hole when you actually see how many brains you put in there in terms of brains and anti-brains. Okay?
Right.
The density of these brains and anti-brains is such that they are really on top of each other, within Planck distance of each other. Right? When you make a brain bound state, it's a bound state of brains. Let's not talk about density. If you make a bound state of a large number of brains, even if the thing is not supersymmetric, this turns out to be the entropy in all cases. Okay.
Right, maybe now, it's a little unclear where. I mean, if in the brain picture of the black hole, where are these brains? Are they?
Okay, very good question. If you want to ask me what is actually happening in the brain on the gravity side, I could give you a whole lecture there because those are the first balls we make. Okay, so we actually know the whole gravity picture of these brain states. What do the brain states look at strong coupling? But I haven't talked about that. So I'm just trying to bypass the question for now.
Right.
But we do know everything about it. And from all that we know about the structure of those black holes, this formula just becomes better and better, and the things become more and more free the more of these brains you put into the bound state. So but at the end, you can say it's a postulate, okay? Because it is working for black holes. I try to give you all that evidence just to tell you that black holes bring us here.
Wrap up, sure.
Yeah.
Questions. Are you
finished
with your slides, or?
I have finished. I think that was my last slide, and
I want
to
go. Okay, so let's thank Samir then. I'll try and take more questions. So, Samir will be here until Wednesday or Tuesday next week, so if you want to find him afterwards.